Continuing on my recent attempt to convince you that politics is quite exciting, on tonight's agenda we have a quashed mini-revolt in Legco. When is a rates bill not a rates bill? And one of the best speeches in June Tynwald. And we'll begin with that, a cracking speech on horse trams, delivered in June Tynwald by Sarah Maltby.
Who am I, Dr. N? Before I begin, honourable members, I'd like to share a quote.
Mrs. Maltby just smacked David.
A quote from the popular American television series, The Outer Limits. There is nothing wrong with your television sets. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission.
We're only on the radio.
Honourable members, there is no need to adjust your microphone sets. What you are about to hear will seem like an apparent repetition of the speech I delivered in March. This is not a technical fault. Let me reassure members, the problem is not with your recollection. What you are witnessing may seem strange, perhaps even hard to believe, but it is real and unfolding exactly as anticipated. As is often the case, reality can be more surprising than fiction. Once again, we are debating a matter that this court has already considered and on which it has already expressed a clear view. The difference today is that the work this court requested has now been completed. Members will be aware that this issue has been debated for many years. Despite a growing recognition across both this court and our island that a financial decision is now required, there remain those who argue that the answer is yet more delay. I do not believe continued procrastination serves any useful purpose, and so I have an amendment that has now been circulated, which reads that Tynwald approves option 3, reinstate the track to the sea terminal contained in the business case for the reinstatement of Douglas Bay Horse Tramway to the sea terminal, and notes the likely cost of up to £3 million, and requests that the Treasury return to July Tynwald with the necessary capital funding request, noting that any further postponement is likely to increase project costs. The proposal before you today has not emerged from outer space. Members should note that the department's own business case identifies option 3, reinstating the track to the sea terminal, as the preferred option. It is the option recommended following the work that Tynwald itself requested. The Department of Infrastructure has done precisely what Tynwald asked it to do. Some honourable members will understandably focus on the headline figure of up to £3 million. However, during question time, the Treasury Minister satisfied me.
Really?
That does represent a worst case scenario on both accounts, rather than an unexpected outcome. The business case confirms. The business case confirms that substantial allowances have been built into the estimates through contingency and optimism bias. Now, Treasury may call it optimism bias. I might suggest it's closer to pessimism bias. I urge members to consider the alternative to delaying this decision beyond July. The business case itself acknowledges the risks posed by inflation, market conditions, and future construction costs. Every month or every year we postpone a decision increases the likelihood that the eventual cost will be higher, not lower. Experience would tell us that further delay does not produce a cheaper or better outcome. There is every reason to believe it will simply make the project more expensive. Indeed, this Treasury has already increased the contingency provision by £1 million. Who can say what a future Treasury may decide? If we do not take this step now, I fear we may never see the tramway reinstated. Members should also remember that this court has already expressed its view. In March, Tynwald unanimously requested that the department bring a capital funding request, implementation plan and full business case. The department has done exactly that. This amendment is therefore a responsible and measured next step. It does not authorise expenditure today. It does not bypass Treasury procedures. It does not circumvent financial regulations. What it does do is give Treasury the reassurance that this is a project which should proceed to the established capital project process. It also requests Treasury to return to Tim Wood in July with the necessary funding motion. Approving this amendment simply ensures that a project which has been debated repeatedly, subjected to a full business case and recommended by the Department of Infrastructure is allowed to progress the next stage within this lifetime of the administration. That is all. Continued uncertainty serves no one. Businesses cannot plan with confidence, residents do not know what's going on, and government departments remain in limbo. This court has already determined this matter should proceed. It is therefore in the interests of all parties that this now does without further delay. At its heart, this is a straightforward matter. It should be resolved promptly and decisively. A business case, Ecterin, is intended to inform a decision. It is not intended to become a reason for avoiding one. This amendment gives government one final opportunity to bring forward a funding motion in July. The choice is clear. We can continue debating this issue indefinitely, incurring further delay, uncertainty and cost, or we can allow the established process to continue and consider the funding proposal when it returns this court next month. The department has done the work, the business case has been completed, the preferred option has been identified. Before I conclude, honourable members, I could not help but notice yesterday, I believe, the days have gone on, but yesterday, that the Honourable Minister Thomas seemed particularly fond of words beginning with the letter F. Well, I too have a few choice words that begin with F. That begin with F that I too would like to share. The first is focus. Because after years of discussion, reports, reviews and debate, it is time to stay focused and deliver the will of Tim Wald. The second is forge, because we have an opportunity to forge a legacy that will not fade, a decision that future generations will see, not as another discussion deferred, but as a project delivered. And the third is finish, because there comes a point when government must just get on and finish what it started. And so, honourable members, we now return control of your television set to you. The Department of Infrastructure has completed its transmission. The signal from Tim Wood has been mainly clear. The only question remaining is whether you want the Treasury to act upon it. I urge honourable members to support the amendment in my name. Tammy Shurikid and Triotis Hurrer Roche, I beg to move.
That was Douglas South MHK Sarah Maltby. Next, Treasury Minister Chris Thomas. You have a rates bill that, up until fairly recently, you were planning to bring through House of Keys, at least. What's happened to that?
So we had a really good discussion with members in the Brew Suite, and we've decided, given that if the Legislative Council amends the bill, even if it gets through the House of Keys, it'll have to come back to the House of Keys after the election, that we're going to preserve the good work we've done. We can engage further with local authorities, new members, and then take it as a bill straight away after the election. That's the current plan. I won't be moving then the clauses at on the 23rd of June, and I'll be making a statement to my Keys colleagues on the 30th of June, I believe.
So, I mean, rates reform is something that's been effectively removed from the agenda by, as far as we understand it, Councillor Minister. They just decided rates reform, local government reform, these things weren't going to happen. So how did this rates bill appear?
So that was the position back at the beginning of the administration. In fact, I teased the two chief minister candidates during that period when the government was being formed, that they had polar opposite views on rates. Mr. Cannon won, no rates, no major rates reform. Towards the end, it became obvious that we needed to do something. We could do something positive in a few areas, and that's what this bill was done. It was a very tightly constrained bill, consulted on again last year. One was on quarries. The evidence that was submitted to local authorities wasn't accurate, and it's quite tricky. So that stopped. We were left with three elements: how to treat charities, and in essence, what government was proposing was that we would favour churches, community hall type things, which are already rated favourably, and also we go for registered charities in the building they were using for charitable purposes. There are people who don't think you need to be registered to get advantage of that. That was obvious in the Brule Suite, so we've decided it's too controversial at this stage. We'll put all the good work that we've done. What we're actually doing is putting into law what current policy is. So current policy carries on as it has been. The third area was on a rate rebate scheme. The law has allowed for rate rebates for decades, but there's never been a rate rebate scheme. So we were making some small measures to allow local authorities to agree with Treasury, that Treasury would take a specific scheme to Tim Ward for approval for a certain period, up to a certain amount. Or Treasury itself could come up with a scheme. For instance, let's imagine the Laxey flood. We needed a scheme for Laxey. We could have made it under that process. Good work. Banked. We'll do it next time. And then the final one was on dilapidated property type places. We were going to look to positively rate them rather than zero rate them. The issues with that were that some people wanted to extend it to vacant properties, empty properties sometimes called, to all sorts of second properties. They wanted to have multipliers, and it was all going to get very tense inside the House of Keys. And in any case, it would also do that in the Legislative Council, and it would come back to the Keys. So we've decided to bank what we've got and come back again after the election.
But most of these issues are tinkering, really, with the system, rather than doing what I suppose for generations has been identified by politicians as an unfair system, badly in need of reform.
Exactly. But you would need a five-year programme. You need a phased approach to do that. And we've certainly got phase one, because phase one can certainly make a difference to charitable rating, to the sort of abandoned, dilapidated, ruinous properties, whatever they are, and to the rate rebate schemes, perhaps also quarries. That would be a good phase one. Phase two would be going on to rateable value more generally. The rate system and local government reform, yes, we need that after the election. And a good point that I've heard you say on your various shows is that it would be even better if it was bottom up. Bring it on. You know, if the southern commissioners where you live can put together a coordinated agreed position, that would be so much better. In July, Tim Wool, we've got the Northern Civic Amenity Site order coming, I believe, the joint board creation. We've still got committee in that sector in the east. Lots of issues have been fleshed out. Now is the time, in the sense of after the election. We've got 5 years to work on it. Start at the beginning, we'll make good progress, and it needs to be done.
That was Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas. Finally, pharmacists' champion, Gary Cluett.
Fundamentally, the issue with the bill is at the principle, you know, when it was being designed at the policy stage, there was consultation with the four industries, the dentists, the opticians, the GPs, and the pharmacists. And I think everybody understands the need for modernization and for change. That's not the issue. The issue is, and unfortunately, because of time, which has been an issue from the start of this, for the last several months, getting so many bills through in such a short period of time, I was approached just over a week ago by the pharmacy group. You know, the pharmacy owners of Pharmaceutical Association, to express concerns about the state of the bill. Fundamentally, the change that is being brought about is that our NHS service providers today operate under indefinite contracts. Basically, it's an agreement for service, and you know, it can be terminated for cause. I believe there are issues with termination, which is one of the reasons why they've decided they want to go with contracts as opposed to just an open-ended agreement. And that's fair enough, and I think the industry understands that. Now, I've not had the time to speak to the other groups other than the pharmacies, but I think in general that things are understandable. The issue is that at the moment there is no indication of what those contracts are going to look like. They do require, before they're coming, this comes into force, it does require that the department consult with industry and bring forward regulations to Tynwald. The issue is that nobody knows. So you're taking a group of providers, some of which, and the pharmacies alone, there are some third and fourth generation families that have run our community pharmacies that are pillars of our community. They're well loved by the people, and they now feeling really uncomfortable because there's the seismic change in going from this sort of open-ended contract to what they're being told is a fixed-term contract.
And they have described this as having potentially disastrous consequences for pharmacies on the island because they won't be able to bring in new pharmacy providers to provide cover across the island when businesses close or want to sell on. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of language where you think this has really got to?
I have concern. As a business owner, been in business for pretty much all my life, I understand the concerns. You've worked for many, many years possibly inherited from your father and your grandfather, and you've built up, and you're approaching retirement. You've built up a lot of sweat equity into those businesses. And normally when you come to sell on your pharmacy, there's this thing called goodwill, which is a component of almost any business sale. And the introduction of fixed term contracts and the uncertainty that surrounds that at this point impacts that goodwill. What buyer is going to pay the same price for something that, I can just continue operating unless I do something bad or stupid?
But surely, effectively, if this is the case, what we're saying here is that the goodwill is the value of having a license which is issued by the department. So that the value is from the license, not necessarily what you've been describing, the effort over the years. If the license isn't there, that effort isn't going to be recognised. So surely that means it's actually the license they're paying for.
I don't think so. I think the reality is that people, as I say, the license is not really goodwill. Goodwill is the neighbourhood, it's the pharmacy, it's the turnover, it's the profit, or lack thereof, as the case may be. Those are the things that determine the value of a business. Yes, certainly having a license is a component of it, but it's not the only component. As I say, the intangible aspects, plus the physical premises and that, which are likely to be unaffected too much. It is something that deeply concerns the pharmacies. And as I say, it's not that they're against fixed-term contracts. The point is, how long are those contracts going to be? What are the terms and conditions of those contracts? What are the terms and conditions surrounding renewals? What happens when you want to sell your business? All of these things...
But all that detail will be in the secondary legislation.
Yes.
I know what you were moving for was that the secondary legislation needed to have been consulted on before the bill is, or the provisions of the bill are introduced. The appointed day order for those provisions has been made, but no department is going to introduce or appointed day orders, effectively bringing effect to the primary legislation.
for things that specifically refer to things that require secondary legislation, if that secondary legislation hasn't already been produced. And no department produces secondary legislation without doing public consultation. So is this just an issue of trust, do you think?
I think so. I mean, and the intervening period. You know, the department's pretty much said that it'll be at minimum of 18 months to 2 years. What does a pharmacist who may want to retire and sell up do today? When, if the bill passes, and presumably it'll get royal assent, becomes an act, and you go to sell your business, or you go to the bank, and you say, I want a loan to buy a pharmacy or to expand my pharmacy, you know, invest in new whatever. And the bank says, okay, but you know, they may not look at what's coming down the track. But on the other hand, once it becomes an act, everyone's sort of in this limbo waiting to see what those regulations say, because ultimately the issues with saleability, with values, all sorts of things come down to what are the terms and conditions around those contracts. And you know, when, as I say, this is a seismic shift in the way we deal with our independent healthcare providers, and it, you know, I think they're worried because they don't have any certainty. I would have thought the least the department could have done as part of consultation, of which there's been not very much with the industry, is at least provide some level of outline guidelines, or you know, what the regulations might look like, to give them some comfort. So all my amendments that I proposed today, I very explicitly did not challenge anything that had gone on in Keys. I didn't interfere with anything that Keys had agreed or debated or you know or decided against.
And some members of Keys had or share the concerns that you have as well.
And you know, so these amendments were simply kind of do no harm, but provide some level of certainty to the industry. And yes, I think it was Mrs. Morford had initially raised the issue, which of course I knew about, was that there are four groups covered by this legislation. Pharmacists are one of them, and my amendments only dealt with pharmacies. I was trying to get the principle across that this is an issue that needs to be done with. I've not had the time, nor the you know just the bandwidth to approach the other the other groups. But I think as Mr. Reed moved, that there were amendments that were brought forward this morning, where there were changes made to one, I think, one group in Keys, and then the department brought amendments to regularize that across the other groups. I was hoping that something similar could happen with this, is that we agree on the principle of this is the way we should be dealing with these things going forward, and once that principle is agreed, that then the department go back and regularize it across the other three sets of providers. Because fundamentally, I suspect they all going to face somewhat similar conditions, even though you know their businesses are quite different.
One of the things that, well, there's a few things I think that have been suggested, but one particular thing that the mover suggested, this is Diane Kelsey, and you know, she's not known for making deep and impassioned speeches, but she basically seemed to be suggesting that you are inexperienced, you don't understand how the system works, and you need to be a little bit more trusting. And once you have gained experience, you will understand how it works and maybe not be so disruptive.
Well, I'm sorry if anybody feels it was being disruptive. I honestly do not do these things lightly. This has caused me some heartburn, because A, I didn't need the extra work to, you know, bringing through the financial services bill and various other things that I've been doing recently. It's something that sort of touched a nerve in me, because I fully understand where the pharmacists are coming from. My background's business. Yes, I'm a novice. I'm a novice parliamentarian. I've been in here all of 16 months. However, I do know something about business. I've spent my life in business. I've spent my life writing contracts. I know how things work at that level, and that is the level that I think seems to be being somewhat ignored in this process.
Why do you understand from what's been said that the department wouldn't accept your suggestions?
I have absolutely no idea. There's been effectively, we did have a meeting with all the stakeholders last Thursday, which I think was the first time that they'd ever all sat down in a room together. I don't know. In my personal view, there's been a lack of engagement across. The department seems to treat amendments as annoyances rather than topics for at least debate, negotiation, and see if there's some way we can, you know, work things out to our mutual satisfaction. I think, again, the real issue with this, I mean, I know I went on a bit about our parliamentary system and secondary legislation, ceding power and various things like that. But I mean, at the moment, it's just born out of sheer frustration. The workload that we've been handed over the last sort of 4 to 6 months as we come to the end of the administration, and the lack of time to do things properly.
That was MLC Gary Cluett, who failed to convince his LegCo colleagues. So what do you think? Rates reform well overdue, or best to let sleeping dogs lie? Will we ever see an end to the horse tram debate? Is the future of pharmacists really under threat? There's a full list of all candidates so far declared for September's House of Keys election on Manx Radio's website. Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast. I'm Phil Gorn. Gura mai os yn geisioch rwm. Thanks for listening.